Hey everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. Sorry I'm talking really quietly. It's 5 a.m. and I am currently in an airport about to head to Texas to hunt Audad with West Texas Hunt Organization and my buddies from Canis. But anyway, this podcast I recorded last week. I apologize. I've been fighting a little bit of a cough. But this is with my new friend, Jay Crast of Reckoning Media. He does some awesome work in the outdoor industry with film and commercial work and stuff, and doing some really cool things this year. So we have a really cool conversation just kind of behind the curtain about production and the business of what we do, and just had a really frank discussion, and it was actually one of my favorite conversations I've had in a really long time. So hope you guys enjoy this episode. I'm headed directly from my hunt in Texas to SHOT Show, so if you're gonna be there, shoot me a DM. Let's connect while we're there. Love to meet you. So yeah, thanks guys for support. We'll see you on the next one. I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Jay Crast. All right, everybody, welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters, and today I'm here with Mr. Jameson Crast. What's up, dude?
How you doing, man?
Do you prefer to be called Jameson or Jay?
All my friends back home, family, call me Jay. Everybody else in the world calls me Jameson. Really don't have a preference.
Okay. All right, cool, man. And you are the, I guess, founder of Reckoning Media Co., correct?
Yep. All one of us. Just myself.
Hey.
One of those, you know, fake it till you make it. But
hey, you know, I'm over here too. I'm with the entire employees of Quest Media LLC. So we're good.
There you go. You gotta start somewhere, man.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, did you used to do something with Waypoint, like the TV channel, or do you know?
A company that I used to work for, Rusted Rooster, when I was with them, did a little bit of stuff on and off. Not me personally, but
okay,
we did some stuff over there. So
I couldn't remember if we had, like, because I talked to those guys a while back, and I couldn't remember if I thought that was somehow how I came across you. I'm not really sure, but yeah, man. Where are you located right now?
Wyoming, northeastern Wyoming, Gillette area.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so my wife and I moved out here 4.5 years ago, originally from upstate New York, and I specify upstate as being its own area.
Yeah, well, you're still,
you know,
a Yankee.
Kind of like Illinois and Chicago, you know?
But still a Yankee, though.
Yeah, how about you? Where are you at?
I'm just messing with you. I'm in Northern Virginia. I grew up in like Chesapeake or Virginia Beach, Virginia. And then lived down there for a while, went to school in Southwest Virginia, and now I live like about 40 minutes from D.C. in Northern Virginia.
Gotcha.
Which is, it's not bad. It's pretty cool. I mean, you know, I definitely have to travel a lot because almost everything I do is out west. I'm right next to a huge airport, though, so that's not too bad. And there's lots of cool cultural stuff around here and good food and close by to family. So it's we're making it work.
Yeah, that carries a lot of weight. We're going through that right now where it's you want to move west because every single thing that we do and love and want to do from August through, you know, January is west.
Yeah.
But then when you get out here, it's so damn big. It's like still travel to elk hunt. I still travel to mule deer hunt. I still travel to whitetail hunt. And you're all said and done. You look at it and you're like, okay, I'm still traveling X number of days a year. And my nearest family is 26 and a half hour car ride.
Yeah.
Like, you know, is that trade-off really worth it? So that's what my wife and I are going through right now is it's like, you know, there's a lot of benefits of being a resident of, you know, Western states.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of weight and that negative that kind of comes with it. So
is your wife from New York too?
Yeah. She grew up like an hour from where I grew up. So we're both of our families and we have two babies under 2 years old right now. So that with no family out here, it's like,
she's
busy.
Yeah, I get that, man. Cause like I was looking at, like, hey, should I like find somewhere to stash like a trailer with all my gear out, like in like Salt Lake or like near Denver or something? And I started looking at it, it's like Dude, you're still gonna have like an 8 hour drive almost anywhere. Like,
Yeah.
it's not even worth it. So luckily right now I'm working with this really cool videographer who like just likes driving across the country. So like we have two hunts pretty close this fall, and he's just gonna like drive out. I'm gonna give him all my stuff and he's just gonna drive out.
Perfect.
Yeah. So
Perfect.
yeah, it's another thing is too, I mean, I kind of like, in a way, it's almost kind of nice being an outsider a little bit. I don't know. I feel like it sort of gives me a different perspective. And I kind of like the challenge of, hey, I've never even hunted this state. All I've done is e-scout this. Let's make it happen, you know? So it's
Elaborate on that a little bit. Do you like that from an aspect of like you personally feel more fulfilled when you go into an area you've never been, or you like being an outsider in other people's eyes?
both. I almost feel like being from Virginia, you know, some people might look at it as like, oh, it's a negative. I like try to like flip it from the beginning of, let's see how this can be a positive for me. Like, in that I have to be sharper on my skills of, yeah, e-scouting and showing up to a spot like hunted Colorado this year for the first time ever, and made it my mission. I wasn't going to even talk to anybody about the unit. I wasn't going to get pins from anybody, nothing, none of that crap. I was going to, find the unit I want to hunt, apply for it, e-scout it, and we went in there and killed a nice buck on opening day. And obviously there's always an element of luck in there, but it was really cool to see the progression, how far I've come. And I have learned from a lot of other people. I'm not saying like I'm some badass or anything, but it's just cool to see that I've learned a lot over the years. And I think it's forced me to learn more and more and learn faster being from outside. And I just think it also gives me a different perspective on stuff. And I don't know. I feel like if I grew up out there, it's kind of like, oh, it's just another Western guy, of course he knows how to kill mule deer and elk. For me, it's like this whole new thing of the past 4 or 5 years. I had just completely just, it's like, it was like I started hunting from scratch again, which I'm sure you probably experienced some
Yeah.
too, huh?
Oh, 100%, dude. And that's like, so I fell in love with, like, I've hunted whitetails forever. Like, that's in upstate
Same.
New York. Like, that's what we've got, whitetails. And you're killing a deer. I mean, if you kill 105 inch 8 point, you're like, where you're being talked about at the local diners. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, damn,
Nice.
did you hear so and so killed the big, you know what I mean? So it's,
Yeah,
they're
the
smaller deer generally.
big woods bucks.
Yeah. And so then, I just completely fell in love with the whole spot and stock. And what I really love about the Western hunting game is you sit in a tree stand, you can have food plots, you can have whatever. And unless you've got, completely, unlimited funds and you have unlimited acreage to be able to go and implement the food plots and everything, you're sitting on a little piece of private land or public land. And there is that hope factor that I
Yeah.
hope that I did everything right and a deer walks by. And I hate that. Like
Yeah.
when you go Western hunting, like when you come out here and like first time I came to South Dakota, spot and stalk mule deer, and I was like, if I walk far enough today and I glass hard enough, there is a 95%+ chance that I will lay eyes on a deer that I want to pursue.
Yeah.
And like having that control, I'm like, oh damn, this is awesome. All I gotta do is walk further and glass harder.
Yeah.
And like then that transition to elk, and then that's transition, to moose and to mountain goats and to sheep and all this. And it's like I love having that control. I can't say, well, deer just weren't on their feet today. It's like, well, if you walk far enough, you can go find them on their feet or find them in their
Right.
bed. So like
Yeah.
I fell in love with that. And it's been kind of like a little running joke that I'm mad at mule deer for the last like 6 years. It's like that's all I want to do is chase big mule deer.
Dude.
Like that's I would way rather do that than go sit in a tree stand and try to hunt whitetail. Like I feel like I've done that. That and I think it's all cyclical as a hunter.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be a point in time in the next 5 years or 10 years for sure where I'm like, man, I just really want to get back in a tree stand in Ohio or Illinois or Kansas and hunt
Yep.
a big whitetail. But right now, not what I want to do.
Dude, I'm with you, man. Like, I learned this year that like I was like, do I like elk hunting more? Do I like mule? Like, I decided like this year it is 100%. Like, I am a mule deer guy. I freaking love mule deer. I would seriously rather hunt mule deer than like sheep or like anything. Like, I love them. They're so cool.
What's the hit me with the because I so we did a film for Benelli about this past fall, and had some questions and really did some soul searching. So I know my answers. So that leads me to want to hear your answers. When you say you love them,
Yeah.
if you were to write like a love letter about like mule deer, like what is it that about them that's just like just has you infatuated? What is it?
Well, I think, from the beginning of it is just like you said, growing up hunting deer. I already have always loved deer, just from a child. Like, just the first time I did sit in a tree stand and remember I watched like 14 deer in this little bean field. They had no idea I was there. And I just watched them for like 3 hours. And I was like, that's when I was like, I, 'cause my dad's a bird hunter. But that was when I was like, yeah, this is it. This is me. This is what I want to do. So I always had that like love of deer. I guess so there's some of that nostalgia there. But then I guess, and I don't really know other than, and then, well, I'll say this. When I first started like getting the itch to like go out west and hunt deer or to hunt, there we go. It was dreaming of a big mule deer, and I don't know why. It was just like iconic. Maybe it seemed more attainable or something. I don't know. And then, getting out and actually learning about mule deer and what they are all about and stuff. It's like the place, and this might sound cliche, but it's just true. It's just the places that they live and choose to hang out are so epic. And like, I remember I was driving when I first started, I was driving from like, I think I was driving from like New Mexico to Vegas to a show or something, or to Salt Lake City. And like, as hunters, when you're going on a road trip, you're always scanning, looking for deer and stuff like that. And my brain was set to scan the ag fields, check out the ag fields. Like, there's gonna be deer in there. And after like an hour of like nothing, I started driving through snow, no tracks, nothing. And then I was like, and then I started looking like on the other side of the road, it was just like straight up cliff onto a mountain. And that's where all the mule deer tracks were. And I was like, these are just different animals. They don't give a crap about the ag fields. They want to be in the mountains. And then I remember one time I was on a OTC Barbary sheep tag hunt and looking for sheep, and found some Rocky Mountain or desert bighorn sheep, and there were mule deer like 500 feet above the sheep. I was
Yeah.
like, what? And so just that, I guess. And then one thing which just on a practical level that I just really like about them more than elk, well, there's the fact that they're a little harder to find. Also, I mean, elk are huge and pretty easy to glass. If they're there, you're going to see them. Deer are a little harder to find. They have some kind of mystical quality to them. And then you can pack a deer out by yourself if you have to. Elk, it's not happening. It's just like the amount of work. Like, you can go on a solo deer mission and get it done and bring that thing out if you have to. It's not easy, but you can do it.
Right. With all your
Elk,
gear, one trip in
yeah.
and out, like, yeah, this is gonna suck, but we're coming out today.
I have done it before. It was a small mule deer, but I have done that. And it was 5.5 miles too, and winter camp. So it can be done. Yeah, so those are some of the reasons. I don't know. What would you say?
Well, one of them that really resonated was the location. And there's a good friend, Casey Kiefer, I've done a lot of work with over the years. He always, I think he stole this line, but he said he's a trout bum. He said trout don't live in ugly places. And I don't remember where he got that line from, but you can apply the same thing to mule deer, man. Like
Yeah.
it might be, nasty rolling, barren ground, sagebrush flats. It might be freaking, like you said, alpine, but they're always in a cool, unique, beautiful area. But I think like the big gray faces. Like that to me, like
Yeah.
there's so many times when you're just glassing, you're scanning, sagebrush or whatever, and it's like all you see is this little gray spot the size of a freaking softball. And you're
Yeah.
like, ah, there's his nose and his eyes and his, right there. And it just, I don't know, that itself is cool. And then obviously, I mean, the bighorn thing, like the fact that
Yeah,
we're looking at
they're just
28,
bigger.
30 inch wide frames is just freaking cool. Like
Yeah.
that alone is cool in this, but yeah. I got mad at him lately. That's all I want to do is hunt mule deer, but I really want to hunt sheep. I just can't afford that at this point in time.
I know, man.
I
It's
don't know
getting
if I'm going
crazy.
to. It's getting freaking nuts,
It's
man.
getting nuts. It really is. And back what you were saying too about like the cyclical thing too. I was just having that thought the other day. It's like,
because I started watching. There are a few guys actually putting out some really cool whitetail stuff now. Like, I actually do like watching Chris B's videos, and he's about the only guy that I watch that does whitetail stuff anymore. But I was like, you know, because there is something to be said about that adrenaline rush that comes when like that big buck steps out 30 feet, you know, or 30 yards, 20 yards, whatever it is. It's a different and probably more intense, in my experience, adrenaline dump, because you're just like sitting there and it's like bam and it hits you like a brick wall. And I get the whole cat and mouse thing if you're able to like own some land and stuff, and that's really cool. But I had the same thought. I was like, man, I can hunt whitetail in a tree stand when I'm like 85 years old and my knees are broken. Like, I only have so many seasons I can really chase a mule deer. I'm gonna get them in. You know what I mean?
No, you're spot on to that. And I think, I don't know how old your kids are, but like my little boy Waylon, he's, I don't know, like 20 months. He'll be 2 in May. But
Cool.
I can see, like, in Kansas and Iowa, you can buy points. So like they've got points right now. Like, and I've been building that. So it's like the second he's old enough to go sit in the tree stand and pull a bow, like I can see that, you know, going back to the style before he can spot and stalk deer. I can see, like, all right. And I imagine at that season in my life we'll get back into, you know, bow hunting whitetails heavily. But I just think it all comes with time. Right now it's like let's go hike back in and find some, you know, mule deer and some. And dude, one of the things that I have really, really, really slacked on is I'm a resident of Wyoming, meaning that I can get a Region G or a Region H freaking mule deer tag, guaranteed general season tag every year that you would have to put in for 12 to 18 years to draw. I can get
Insane.
it every freaking year and I haven't done it. And that's like, you want to talk about
That is
missed
wild.
opportunities. Like I need to get over there and go do it. But
Well, you ha I know you did some work on some deer this year, which I want to hear about.
it was freaking, it was,
But
so.
before we jump into that though, real quick, I want to hear just a little bit of your backstory of how you got into production and combined that with hunting, and that'll kind of lead us to kind of where we're at today. Then I want to hear about your year and all that.
Okay. I'll give you the Cliff Notes version. Born and raised upstate New York, and football was like it was sports guy. You know what I mean? Like hunted it
Yeah,
like
you're a
Friday
big
night
dude.
football games. And then like as soon as that was done, it was like, okay, we're going to deer camp. But football was the priority. So getting in you know, junior, senior year of high school, start getting looked at a little bit for some colleges and not tall enough to get looked at by anything like, you know, D1 schools, just D1 AA and whatnot, and D3 schools. So then it was like, well, we need a highlight film. Well, highlight films at that point in time were outside the wheelhouse for my parents, like from a dollar standpoint, like to have somebody edit your game film. So I remember my mom and dad being like, well, we'll buy you the editing software. You edit your own game film. I'm like, all right, that's fair enough.
That's
That
cool.
that'll work. So it was like Sony Vegas something or other. Like it was like the $99 version. I remember mom and dad bought it, and I used one of their work laptops and put together this game film. So with that, I'm like, oh, this is cool. There's a lot of things you can do. So then it's like start filming my brothers and I hunt and turkey hunt and this and that. And I've never been the guy that like has to kill. Like I just like being along and watching other people. Like I want to be in on the hunt, but I don't have to be the guy getting bloody. So that led to filming my brothers and dad and other stuff. Well, then fast forward, go to college to play football. Spent one semester and I was like, this is not for me. It was a very good school, little private school, rich, hoity-toity. I was wearing freaking, you know, Johnson Woolen Mills like wool jacket across campus. Like, did not fit in. Transferred to another school, played football there for a year, and my roommate that I ended up meeting and became really good friends with, he was a video journalism major and he was editing like nonstop, and he was using Final Cut Pro at the time and this and that. So I like that dude single-handedly like set me up for everything I'm doing now. And just like we would just edit, like we'd go waterfowl hunt in the morning, shoot 20, 30 geese, come back, make a video of it, you know? And that really, it was what I did for fun but fully loved it. Fast forward my senior year, a company at a little local sporting goods or trade show was like, "Hey, dude, can you make a booth video for us?" I'm like, sure. So I do a booth video for them. The quote unquote talent, the husband and wife that had a TV show at the time that were the paid guests at the time, they saw the video, wanted to know who did it, gets passed down to me. So just like a lot of those things, like right place, right time, like super fortunate, blessed. A lot of things worked out.
Yeah.
The production company that was doing their show, Wrestled Rooster at the time, the Kiefer Brothers and Jason Brown out of Michigan,
Yeah. Well, also, I want to jump in there too, is like you had the love for it and the drive to do it. That's something I feel like, a lot of guys who just like, they're like, oh, I want to grab a camera and start making films so I can get some free gear or whatever. Like they fade out because like you have to love it. Like I'm having to farm out most of my editing this season because I just don't have time to edit 10 episodes anymore. But like, I'm still editing like two or three of them because like I want to. I can't imagine not editing something. So like, you have to love it, and just that with anything in life, like that willingness to do it for free, or you would do it for fun. And then if you're able to turn that into a paid gig or a career, that's when the magic can happen.
And that's really what it was. I mean, I can't, there's so many freaking days you get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you're setting decoys and you're just filming people and it's cold and you're sitting back there and everybody's smashing birds and I'm just filming for fun. You know what I mean? And it's like there's no dollars being exchanged at
Oh, yeah.
all. You know what I mean? Like hell, I paid gas and food to be there, you know? And then, but I just loved it. And then the Kiefer Brothers and Jason Brown gave me a shot right out of college. I moved out there when I was 22 years old to Michigan, worked for them for 4 or 5 years. And that, I mean, completely changed my world. Like that,
What was
you
that,
know,
their business?
Wrestled Rooster.
Yeah.
And so they were doing like Drop Project Alaska is really what put the Kiefer Brothers on the map.
Okay. Yeah, I've
Yep.
seen that.
The two red bearded dudes. And we were doing Winchester work and freaking Sheep Shape, a show, and then their show Backcountry Quest and just Scentlock, you know, a lot of a big, you know, good brands. So I was able to be around high-end production like immediately. And it
Yeah.
was, dude, I was running around with like a freaking little Canon 5D Mark II, just soaking in everything that I could from those guys. And you know, Jason took me under his wing. So learned a lot from a lot of these
That
people
was a
along the
great
way.
camera, by the way.
Dude, freaking awesome. Still
That
good
was a great
camera.
camera. Yeah, for sure.
But so anyways, that worked with them for a while. Wanted to move back to New York. And at that point in time, they weren't into open to the idea of having a satellite office, satellite location. So I left, started kind of picking up little clients here and there. I did Levi Morgan's show, Bow Life. We rebranded from Name the Game to Bow Life. Did that for a while with Micah. And then just started, you know, getting more and more clients, and then just enough people have taken a chance on me. It's like I'm not joking. I say fake it till you make it. It's like if you just there's something about consistency and just persistence. Like you just keep doing it over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And for better or worse, sometimes people think that you can do it, you know? And I've loved it. So it's like, it's never been hard to sit down in the evening and study a new color grading tactic or
Yeah.
study a new freaking blah, 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 you know,
And
psychology
so
behind camera movements.
at this point, you're basically a freelance camera guy, right?
At that point in time,
Yeah. Yeah.
that was.
And you're doing freelance editing too, I guess. Okay. So yeah, and that's what I try to tell. Or that's what I tell, guys who are like looking to get into the business and stuff or whatever, or like guys that I've worked with and stuff, is like you can learn camera skills, you can learn gear and all that stuff. You have to love it and have the attitude. Like, if you're sitting there and you're just being a wet rag on the hunt the whole time, I don't care how freaking good with the camera or with editing software you are. Like you're done after one trip with me. And conversely, if you are kind of lacking in your camera skills a little bit, but you bust your ass and have a great attitude and you're an asset in camp, I'm gonna work with you and I'm gonna like help you. So
Bingo,
just
dude. I
real
am
quick
literally
thing.
working with that guy right now. I
Okay.
mean, it's like shout out to Austin Miller, like absolute freaking rock star. Left his job doing HVAC.
I
He
think
just
I've
hated it.
talked to that dude.
He is freaking salt of the
The
earth
Color
human.
Phase Productions?
Yes, don't
Yeah.
steal him from me.
I'm not. I
No,
found a really good kid this year
no,
that
I'm
I'm
serious.
hoping
Like
to lock down.
if you needed a dude, he Austin's freaking awesome. But it's like it's that right there. I've shot
Don't
with
steal him
dudes.
from me. I just gotta say something right there. Isn't that hilarious how it's like there's such a small list of guys who can do this and actually do it well? And it's like you just you do. You feel like you find a guy and they're like, this is my guy. Like no one touched this guy. I found that guy this year. Hopefully.
Yeah. No, it's like in it and I'm semi joking about the steal. I'm like if like use him. Like I want Austin to work because if he's working he's getting better. But it's like so there's two things back to what you're saying.
He sent me a resume a while back, I think. Anyway, go ahead.
Freaking awesome, dude. So if you I've shot with dudes that are like film school guys. You know, they are the most technical freaking, you know, they got their white cards, they've got their freaking slates. I have shot with those guys. You could not pay me to take them on 90% of the hunts that I do.
Yep.
Does their footage look great? Yes, but everything has to be controlled. They have to go home at night. They have to be able to freaking sleep. They can't carry their own freaking weight on their backpack. That's for damn sure. They're not carrying their own gear, let alone their own gear and their sleeping gear.
Let alone an elk
and their
quarter.
Jet boil. Exactly. So it's like, so you have that. So like you, like what we do in our space.
It's one of the hardest things in the world, dude.
Dude, it's so. I mean, you are not only a backcountry adventurer and a hunter, and a survivalist, and you better have some first aid skills.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, you have to be a camera op in the most rugged conditions. I mean, we're looking at positions that would be for Nat Geo to go film, you know, whatever in the mountains for, you know, mountain goat for a documentary film. There, I mean, these dudes are making north of $2,000 a day.
Oh yeah,
and we're asking people to do it for $500 a day, and it's like, and by the way, and own all your own gear, and help me carry this damn elk out.
Yeah,
it's like it's freaking
and
hard.
Have a good attitude.
Yeah, and that's where like you said, when you find the person, when you find the people, that's like, and that's really goes back to you know what I'm the only reason I'm able to do what I do now is because I had enough people that are like, he's got some potential. I like his attitude. He works hard. We can coach him on the rest, you know, and that, so that's where now it's like, if the roles are reversed, if I see somebody that I like, he's not there with skills. Like you can teach that stuff. And if you're passionate and on fire about it, you'll go home and learn how to, you know, edit better, or you'll learn how to shoot better, or you'll go home and edit and see, I missed this shot. I really need to get that next time. And it comes.
Dude, but, the guy that I started working with this year too, like had, another thing that I didn't even know, like, needed to be on the resume, but is like super awesome. He can fix like anything, like car stuff or anything.
Yeah, that's where I am completely worthless.
Me too, dude. Me too.
I like cannot. If I go up to it and I turn it and I'm like, all right, it has fuel and it has power. If it doesn't work, I'm out. Like from that point forward.
Opening the hood and like changing stuff and like patching stuff and
That's
which
awesome.
Is actually a huge asset in the backcountry, man.
Yeah, you found a stud. Now, how is he with horses?
Dude, good. Better than me.
You got a unicorn.
Dude,
you got a unicorn.
Yeah, I don't even want to say his name.
No, that's awesome. Horses, that's like another element. Like if you can freaking roll up, saddle your own horse, set your own stirrup height, you know what I mean, and actually like manage a horse and not just follow in line and just hold on, like you're a rock
star.
So
I did my first ever horse hunt this year with him and a friend who is a local Wyoming guy who owns a few horses. And so at this point I can set my stirrups and like, that's about it. but
better than a lot.
I can properly tie the thing off. I can water them, you know, stuff like that. But my dude, like we forgot some stuff back at base camp and he like went off on like a day's ride and came back like for fun. Like he was like, yeah, I want to go. And I was like, are you kidding me? And like almost got attacked by a grizzly on the way back. Like we were actually, I was actually so worried and like mad at myself for letting him go. I almost like freaked out. But like when we came back to camp, I was like, oh, thank God. And like I couldn't believe I let him go. But anyway, all that to say, yeah, he's a stud on horses too, which is wild.
That's awesome. Super valuable. Super valuable.
Yeah, that was a really cool experience. I guess you're a horse guy?
No, I'm not a horse guy. Years ago, I filmed a series, one of the dropped seasons, and we did like 400 and some miles in the Yukon on horseback.
Wow.
Over 36 days. So I became a horse guy. Like, and I do a couple horseback trips every year. So
it's insane how much work it is.
Yeah, and I really, there are so many times in my life where I'm like, dude, I need a horse. Like, especially living out here. You know, there's so many times I'm like, if I could just throw all my shit on there and get back into there, like, I would go kill big shit. But then there's the who's going to take care of the horse the
Yep.
other 345 days a year that I'm not using him. And
Yep.
like, I'm not gonna. I don't want to. My wife's
Yeah.
not going to. Like, so,
It's tough, man. But
yeah.
anyway, so back to your freelancer and then getting
Yeah,
us
so
into now.
just like I said, just a lot of the right people take chances, and it's one of those like, I don't know, if you over deliver, I just
Yes.
you know, I mean, it always comes back around. So fast forward, Nick Andrews, who used to be at Scentlock, when and I knew him from there, he is then transitions to Benelli. So, you know, a few years ago, he reaches out, was like, hey, dude, you know, I'm working at Benelli now. You're a marketing director. I got some work, some potential if you had any interest. Him and I start working together. Now I do Benelli, Franchi, Stoger's do their films. Another
Nice.
guy, Jared Ream, works at Pulsar and Sightmark now. So I do a lot of Pulsar stuff. So it's like the last 3 years have been just those connections that you did right by the people along the way. They reach out, you know, and it's like it all comes back around, and now it's a chance to work on. I mean, like right now, from a career standpoint, it's like I hard to imagine a better utopia. You know, it's like I get to
Yeah.
take months at a time and say, now I'm gonna do nothing but hunt and work on my own brand stuff, and I'm gonna go work with really awesome high-end brands that are just let you go be creative. It's
Yeah.
like it's, you know. I don't say that in a bragging way. I say it in like a fortunate
For
way. Like
sure.
it's pretty
So,
thankful for that.
Reckoning Media is essentially a production company, right?
Correct.
Okay. Walk me through. So, although what we do is very similar, it's also a completely different like business model. And I'm interested in how your business works. Like, walk me through exactly how your business works, if you don't mind.
So, all right. In my mind's a again, this is like a variation where I've kind of found a niche. So, having the hunting background, I've licensed in a lot of states, I've guided, done a lot of guiding. So there's multiple aspects, and I think where my value has come in is instead of somebody calling and saying, "Hey, man, I would really like you to film this waterfowl hunt, October 16th through the 21st in this place at this time, filming these people, and make this story." A client like Benelli can come to me and say, hey, dude, I really need a freaking piece that pushes the sub gauges. What do you got? And then I'm able to go and say, okay, well, because of, you know, hunting all over the world for however many years with all these other people, like I've got a connection here. I got a connection here. I know a great dude here. We could do this. Here's different locations. And I'm able to put together five different storylines and pitch them and say, we could do boom, 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 boom. Here's the locations. Here's the time. You tell me which one aligns best with your brand. Then they're able to pick that out and say, oh, I really liked Kodiak Island. You know, Harlequin's an old squaw. Let's go do that with a decoy carver. Okay, boom. And I'm able to make that, you know, then turnkey, pitch it, book the hunt with the outfitter because I know the outfitters and, you know, I wasn't a lazy piece of crap like you mentioned. So the outfitters start liking you and you're like, yeah,
Yeah.
dude, you're welcome anytime. So I'm able to then turnkey, identify who the characters are, whether it's the guide, whether it's his nephew, whether it's a person that I know that we just are setting on a hunt, whatever. And then be able to capture the footage, the stills, make the reels, put together the movie posters, the thumbnails, put all that together into one package and deliver it to the client that's like, okay, so here's a 8 to 15 minute piece. Here's all the supporting assets, you know, and here you go. And this really promotes your brand. And they had to do nothing but read a treatment and sign off on it and go, here you go, go kick ass. Here's a check. So, like,
Nice.
that's what that's looked like. Waylon, what are you doing?
I
What are you
saw him
doing?
coming in.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good. Hey, buddy.
So anyways,
He's
that's
about the
really
same
where
age as
my,
my little guy.
yeah, he's saying hi. All right, I'm gonna go send you to the mom. Hang tight, Hunter.
Yeah.
Bit. Apparently didn't lock the door.
All good, man.
So to be able to kind of hand all those off and handle all aspects of it instead of just being a camera guy.
Yeah.
You know, that's been sorry for the crying in the background.
No, you're good,
Little
man.
kid life.
That's such an asset in this business that I've found that's kind of set me apart too in some ways is having that understanding of the production as a whole, being able to manage everything logistically. And it's not just about what you can do with a camera in your hand, it's like what you can do to assemble a team, to plan stuff. Like, people don't think about that. Like, planning six out of state hunts a year is insane amount of logistics. And then on top of that, the production that goes into it and everything else, like I got a awesome, you know, training in that, like in the TV industry before I was in the hunting industry. But it's so much more than just, yeah. And I think, but starting off as a shooter is a great way to start. But like, how much of your all the stuff you just rattled off, like you're making your thumbnails, you're editing, you're making your reels, you know, the actual film, how much of that stuff, percentage wise, if you could break it down, are you actually personally doing yourself?
Well, that's a good question. So I would say up until the last 2 years, 95%, 95 to 100%. The last 2 years, I've really tried to lean into the idea of let people do what they're really good at and you do what you're really good at. And it's less money in your pocket, but it's more money overall, and the product's going to be better. You know, and that's so like I've been working with a guy over in, is it Pakistan? I think it's Pakistan. And he is one of the freaking most talented graphic designers like going. And for $750, you can get the most badass movie poster, thumbnail, freaking like
Oh,
assets,
wow.
banners, everything. And he is phenomenal. So it's like, okay, so I want to work instead of me putting together something that's like, yeah, pretty good. It'll
Yeah.
work. It'll work for our space.
Because your
I
film
want to put
thumbnails are sick.
I appreciate it. So it's like, well, he's doing a lot of them now. So it's like, so send those over. The editing, it's like I've got different, like I just have a list of guys that I believe in that have kicked ass and delivered, you know, year after year, like Chip Spaulding. I don't know if you're familiar with Chip City. He did a lot of stuff for Chris Brackett back when Brackett's show was kicking
I know the
ass.
name.
Super talented guy. Has a very unique, weird style. Like he does some editing. So like he those pieces that aren't like a full-on documentary, like he'll go in and crush those. Work with another guy, Taylor, out of Ohio, and he's more of like your linear story editor. Kelton, the guy out of Michigan. So it's like find those guys, bring them in where they can fit, and then let me do what I'm good at, which is more of the lining up the shoots, going and shooting, identifying the characters, identifying the hunts and all that stuff. And then I've actually transitioned to like 60-40 probably in front of the camera versus behind it, which has been that's been a cool transition. Like, as long as the product's good and the story's being told, I don't necessarily need to be the guy in front of the camera.
Yeah, but
But
sometimes you can insert yourself in the story.
there's times where it's like instead of forcing this guy to say shit that's not accurate or you know, I mean to be a character is not it. Like, I am that character. I
Yeah.
wrote the story kind of about myself. I'll just be the guy, and it comes out better.
Yeah.
So it's
What was the hardest thing for you to let go of?
I think the having the trust that they're getting the shots that I'm picturing in my mind.
Okay.
You know, so you're sitting there and it's like, let's get blah 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 of the scene and not being and I still do it to some extent. But it's like we'll go shoot this little campfire scene for a map planning, like in I'm thinking of a trip we just did in Alaska, a moose hunt, like a little like map planning scene. And I have in my mind exactly how this looks. The tent's lit up in the background.
Yep.
There's a little bit of moonlight coming through, the warm glow of the orange tent and the fire, and I'm sitting there by the and it's like, let's shoot this. But then I'm trusting that he's getting what is in my mind.
Yeah.
And that's a process, like as you know, as you work with different shooters, like figuring out that communication and making sure that you guys are on the same page. That's so I want to be like I wish that there was a way for me to be seeing the monitor the entire time, but I can't when I'm in front of the camera. So I have to trust that he sees it and then not be the pain in the ass, like over the top
Yeah.
micromanager that's like, hey, let me see what you just shot.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do need to see it to make sure we're on the same page. And
Yeah.
that's where I've got the team now that you just trust them. You're on the same page. You kind of talk that through. And but that's probably been the hardest part to get past.
Yeah.
There's
For
one
me,
other thing though,
the oh,
dude,
go
that's
ahead.
like there's one thing, and I'd be interested if you've battled with this. I've always been like one of my dad's sayings, like back in sports days, all the way up through business, everything. He's like, if you're good, you don't have to tell people. Like you don't have to brag about how good you are. You don't have to tell somebody how many yards
Oh,
you
yeah.
passed for. You don't have to tell somebody how many freaking deer and elk you killed. Like people will, talent recognizes talent, right? So with that in the back of my mind, ingrained forever, there's this aspect of being like a personality, a talent, a whatever in front of the camera, where you pretty much have to tell people how great you are and how you separate yourself from other people. And that's one of those to me where I'm like, you know, we'll be filming something and it's like, you know, Chip or somebody will be like, hey, tell me about why you decided this, or tell me about why you wanted to do this. And it's kind of like, well, who makes me the authority? Like,
Yeah.
I don't, who decided that I'm the one that should be? And it's, that's what I struggle with. You know, it's like, there's a, that fine line between being cocky and being like braggy and being an authoritative,
Confident.
confident, informational, educated figure in that topic. And that's
Yeah.
one of those things that I've had a hard time kind of, basically, I feel like somebody would watch it and be like, who the frig is he to tell me this?
Yeah. I guess it
Because
has
I've looked at
a
so many people and been like, why would I value what you have to say? You mean, I've looked at so many people
Yeah.
like, why would I value what you have to say? You
I guess
struggle with that at all?
it hasn't been a huge problem for me yet because I basically don't know what I'm talking about at all ever. So no. No, but there, I mean, there is some level of truth to what I just said. I mean, you know, I do think I'm like probably above average, like baseline hunter, like just generally. But it's been such a learning curve over the past, you know, 5 seasons of mountain hunting, that I, you know, and I knew from the beginning I could never portray myself as a, you know, quote unquote badass Western mountain hunter because I wasn't. I've learned a lot. So, you know, it is actually really cool editing this Colorado deer hunt that I did and seeing myself on camera and being like, wow, man, like you really have grown and learned a lot. Like you don't look like a complete idiot. I mean, you're not like I said, you're not like I haven't arrived or anything, but and it just comes down for me. I mean, I've been fortunate to be able to hunt with some really good guys, really good hunters that I learned from. And you know, part of it too is like not overcomplicating it. A lot of people, I think, overcomplicate it when, like, there are some basic principles that you can kind of adhere to and find pretty good success, but and just working hard. And also, like, in the beginning, I was very intentional about hiring videographers that were more experienced hunters than I was. So, like, yeah, so like I would be on camera, but like at the same time, like, yo, dude, like, what should we do? Like, and they would help me out a lot. And like going back to the guy that I've been working with this year, he's from the East Coast as well. And he approached me like 3, 4 years ago about, you know, working for me. And I had to tell him, not right now, man. Like, no, because I knew like I would benefit hugely from hiring, you know, a similar type guy who grew up in Idaho hunting mule deer because he could help me out. And I needed that. Now it's kind of come full circle where I'm working with a guy now, and he's a great hunter too, but I don't need that as much. So all I have to say is like I've never really spoken much from a place of authority to this point because I didn't have any, and I'm slowly getting it, and I think maybe I haven't struggled with it also because it's just like it's just come slowly over a long period of time of, you know, trial and error and learning from other people. But I don't know. But then, you know, for me, the hardest part to let go of has been the editing just because I take a lot of pride in my edits and like I really like being like, yeah, like I put this together. Like I'm not just the dude on camera who like shoots stuff. Like I take pride in that, the art of putting a story together and how the edits come out looking. So that's been the hardest part for me. This will be the first season where, like I said, I think I'm going to edit 2 or 3 stories and then get some help with rough cuts, and then I'll kind of finish them off, kind of deal.
And I've gone that route too. That I like that. You get the overall say on it. That's a solid route. I've just reached out to Rockhouse recently to try to collaborate on a project. And it's like, as long as I just want somebody better than me. Like if you're the smartest man in the room, you're in the wrong room. You know what I mean? Like get me somebody that is better. I want to go on a shoot and learn from somebody and go, oh, I didn't know that lighting technique, or I didn't know that microphone existed. I didn't think of that strategy. And if you're around those people, like your game elevates. And that's what I've done with editing, is like editing and shooting. It's like I would rather pay somebody else more money, put less in my pocket, and have the overall result be that much better. That then somebody else will acknowledge that and go, damn, that looks really good. I want to call so and so and hire him. And that's where, like, from a credit standpoint, I don't give a shit who's naming the credits. You don't even have to put me in there. As long as the project looks good and the brand is represented the right way, like, that's a win. And whatever that team takes, whether it's all me or whether it's 10 other production companies coming together, like, I just want the product to be the best again, you know?
For sure, man. On that note, what's like, I always struggle with this, like, in like the kind of milieu of what's going on right now with like YouTube just like dominating, which is a whole nother story. But just this, man, how do you like? So I was trained classically in like broadcast television, you know, editing and how it should look and everything, and so I hold myself to a really high standard, and I've had, and then like you know, there's like, it seems like a lot of times, content that is, just to be frank, like not as well put together, more amateur, a lot of times seems to like do better on YouTube. Or like maybe people like it better or something, or like they feel like because something looks very polished and professional, therefore it's not real, or like it wasn't the same level of struggle or like authentic hunting experience, when it is. Like I, just because my stuff looks really good in the edit, I still struggled and was on public land and you know just like anybody else. And probably I know less about hunting than the other guy. So like that's something I struggle with, and like I don't struggle with it anymore, but like I had in the past been like, well, should I like, you know, intentionally kind of dumb down my stuff to make it look, you know, less polished or whatever? And like I kind of landed on, yeah, there are certain types of content that does better on YouTube, like maybe a little more behind the scenes, a little more in camp cooking type stuff, and I'm fine with adding that stuff in. And then I'll cut it down for TV later. But I kind of landed on, man, I'm gonna make good looking stuff. And eventually, you know, if people don't like it, whatever. I'm not gonna like make stuff I'm not proud of because it might
Bingo.
get more clicks or something.
Bingo. Yeah, dude, that's one of those, when you start going down that rabbit hole, it's a nasty one, because I've thought the same thing. You watch a freaking video that was filmed, that's a compilation of a guy's iPhone video and GoPro chesties, and you watch some of it and you're like, 478,000 views on this mule deer hunt, and this, like, it's horrendous. Or there's jump cuts. Hunting Public's a perfect example. There, from an editing standpoint, at least up in the last couple of years, like, it goes against every single thing you ever should do as an editor. Terrible jump cuts, terrible music selection, if there is music, just so many things are like bad, and bad camera settings. And I'm like, but all the views in the world. And it goes back to that, like, that content and the characters are king, and it's like there has to be a delineation between this is proper cinematic storytelling that I'm proud of, and this is achieving the goal. And if my goal is brand awareness and to get a whole bunch of eyeballs on this piece, it doesn't necessarily have to be the most technically sound piece in the world. It just needs to get eyeballs. Now, there's some brands that will recognize that, like Benelli, for example. If we put out there something that was like you're talking about, their brand would not go for it. They want the fine polished, everything is composed correctly. And some brands
Quality
recognize
brands
that.
want to be associated with quality content.
And then, but there's also, like, there's that raw factor of, and a couple guys that do it really well is like, do you know the Foss brothers that do a lot of stuff for Sitka?
For sure. I've done podcasts with Adam.
Have you? Respect the hell out of them. They just did a piece on, that late season sheep hunt for Sitka.
Yeah, I
And
watched
they went up
that.
there with a bow. Like, if you watch that, there's so much of that stuff that's out of focus, or there's
Yep.
fog on the inside of the sensor. You know what I mean? And like, if you've slept in cold weather with your camera in your tent, like, you know the struggle. And there's a lot of those shots in there where it's like the perfectionist in you goes, oh, I need to cut that out. The other side goes, but that's reality. And
Yep.
anybody that's ever been in that condition or can imagine being in that condition can relate to that and knows that struggle you're talking about, which validates it even more. And there's a really fine line there. And like, those dudes and the Sitka team, I feel like they pulled that off.
Yeah.
That the harsh elements and raw, gritty, but at the same time, fine-tuned and produced enough where it carries weight and is quality.
Yeah. Now I've seen
Never met the
some.
dude, but he they're, they seem super talented.
Yeah, Adam's cool. I there's even some guys like decent followings and like names in the industry like it's just the footage is just completely blown out and they're like, "Oh, well, the deer jumped out and I shot him. Sorry, I didn't get it on camera." And it's like, "What?" Like, dude, I understand if you're like an amateur and you're doing YouTube for fun or whatever, but like, dude, you're like in the space and I don't
YouTube's
know.
interesting, man. It can quickly take qual it can ease it can quickly lead you to dumb stuff down, like you said.
Yeah.
And again, yeah, I read a lot of shit just for inspiration and whatever, but there was a quote the other day, and it was like, don't make shit for other people. Like, make it for yourself. Like,
Yeah.
and that could be art, that can be music, that can be a freaking, piano, woodwork, and be whatever it is. Like, and the guy was just talking. He's like, I produce what I think is the best and what
Yeah.
I like and what is art to me. And if other people don't like it, then they won't watch it. And he's like,
Yeah.
but more times than not, people will come back and comment and be like, dude, this really stood out to me. I really like how you did this. And he's like, I'm just making it for myself.
Yep.
And there are people that will like that and
Eventually,
gravitate towards it.
your people will gravitate towards it.
Yeah.
What like you had a YouTube piece? I watched some of it just now. Go over 1 million views this year. The opener for
Yeah.
Stoker. Congrats.
Thank you.
What kind of like? I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and it's just a mind F, but like, what do you think are some of the fact? And there's always like the unknown, but like, what kind of factors do you think like contribute to a successful YouTube film?
So we have broke that down internally on my team. We broke that down through
It can be
Stoger.
available for $7.99.
Yeah, no, we have had that conversation and tried to rack our brains. And this is all speculation, so don't go write a book on it. But here's my take on it. So what that was, the way the opener started was that's a tradition that I had to remove myself from that because I worked, I'm a Benelli ambassador, so I had to remove. I couldn't put myself in that Stoger piece. Conflicts there.
Yeah.
But that's my brothers, that's my dad, that's all my friends. Like,
Oh, okay.
that's a tradition I started like way, 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 way back when. We just have always done it. So again, like, when I write these films, I'm like, here's a good idea, and I know the story really well because I've lived it for 15 years. So we went with all those dudes, and not one of them, just like we talk about in there, none of them are chest pounding, proclaiming to be this. Nobody, is the best shooter in the world. Nobody's the best caller. Nobody's a public figure. Nobody's anything.
Yeah.
They're just real and they're raw and they're passionate. And I think that is the number one, is people can sense real. You
Yeah.
know, people can feel that and go, yeah. And they have no problem picking on each other. I think that's one of the reasons Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs. I think that's one of the reasons that show was a hit, is he actually proclaimed that he was ignorant. And if you're okay with playing the ignorant card and I want to learn from you, that's appealing to people because other people are ignorant. Viewers are ignorant about some things, and as long as they're learning. So I think that level of humbleness that played off. The other thing is, I think there's a big part politically and behind the scenes of YouTube. There's not a lot of bloody killing. There's not a whole bunch of dead birds. There's nothing disrespectful to animals. It's a piece. There's a couple of dudes in there that had never duck hunted until that weekend. Tyler Doe was one of them. So it was very tasteful. And I think YouTube, I imagine YouTube's algorithm and whatever, and whoever makes final decisions behind the scenes there, if they were going to push something and promote it a little bit harder, I have to believe that they would lean harder into things that are done respectfully, ethically, you know, and not glorifying the kill.
For
You know,
sure.
not. So I think that's like, I think they helped push it more because of that. You know, it's like it was done tastefully, and it was a piece where I think you could not be a hunter if you hated hunting, if you disliked hunting, if your dad did it, but you never did it, whatever the case may be, your spouse did it. If you watch that, I believe that you'd watch it and go, huh, yeah, I see it. Those dudes are passionate. You know, you could apply it to yourself, and you might not want to go out and duck hunt next weekend, but you can at least
Right.
respect it.
Right.
And I think that if YouTube is going to push something, I think that's the route they would push, as opposed to, you know, a dude shooting 50 hogs with an AR and piling it up and a bunch of buddies drinking beer doing it. It's like
Yeah.
similar passions, but produced and portrayed differently. I think that would be the biggest, you know, reason for success behind that. That's at least what I can attribute it to.
Yeah. Cool, man. Well, we could probably talk about I was gonna ask you about thumbnails, 'cause like I always want to make like pretty thumbnails, but then I've been experimenting with like the screenshot of me like about to shoot something, you know, which is clickbait, but then is it
Yeah.
quality views versus
Or
so
the I can't believe blah 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 happened.
yeah,
And that's some
exactly.
of or like you'll get Hunting Public did it. Chris B did it a little bit and he got me a couple times on clickbait and it really pissed me off and I quit watching his stuff for a little bit to be honest. Sorry, Chris. But he did his elk film and they had this big bull coming up through the timber and like cut it out, put the glow highlight behind it, put him at full draw, merge the two together, and he's full draw on like a 340, 350 bull in Wyoming public land, blah, 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 blah. And then go in there and he never even gets within bow range of anything. And I watched a 35-minute video to find
Oh,
out that he never
wow.
even got within bow range. And I'm like, stuff like that. It's like, come on,
See,
man.
yeah, I wouldn't do that, but I have done the clickbaity thumbnails, but it's always like actually a scene from the hunt, not like
Right.
completely made up. Like that, I wouldn't do that. That's kind of messed up.
Yeah, but it's like, and then they're like, I can't believe, you know, the worst day of my life. Can you believe it? And stuff like that is like, it's good strategies, man. It works, but there's, again, it just goes back to your brand. You know, what is that brand? Benelli's not going to pull that move, you know, like,
Exactly. And like, is it better to have 10,000 views that watch 70% of your film and loved it and are invested and are actually hunters than 30,000 views and 75% of them are 30-second views that just random people who clicked it and don't give a crap?
correct. And that's another part. That's again, when you sit down in a meeting, you know, with a partner or a future partner, you're throwing numbers at them, you know. Hey, you know, you work with Weatherby, right? Well, gotcha.
Maybe
Well,
not
okay.
anymore.
Got it. So you sit down with a firearm company. Hey, man, I'm getting blah, blah, blah impressions. Okay, well, is that impression from a freaking robot? Is that impression from a dude that hates hunting? Is that impressions from somebody that actually watched the entire thing and felt so inclined? They commented and say, hey, man, what are you running for a pack here? I need one. Like, so there's impressions and there's quality impressions. And again, it's all part of that. Like, it's this freaking nasty facade that you really can't get into. There's no way to get into the background, but those numbers only mean so much and only carry so much
For
weight.
sure. And I think ultimately, like you said, it's your brand. It's like, because I do it sometimes with the thumbnails, but I'm just like, I just feel kind of like almost like a little scummy. It's like I'd rather just put a pretty thumbnail, even if it gets, and I've done the thumbnail test. Usually it's actually pretty much 50-50, to be honest, in my experience anyway. It's never like 80% with the clickbait thumbnail and like, you know. But I think that's good. That's a good word. It's just staying true to your brand and like, who do you want to be? And like they're, you know, females. I had this discussion with Jim Shockey a while ago. Like there are females and there are other guys in the space, you know, that may have huge followings and huge whatever, but they're clowns and like,
Bingo.
or they're like just chicks in bikinis, like that go noodling or something. Like, you
Mean
know.
that you could not be more direct with who you're referring to there. I mean, come on.
Well, I only do that because Jim did the same thing.
Gotcha. No,
And I have no
that's you're a
problem with
hundred.
that individual. I'm just saying, like, I would rather have a half the following of someone than be a freaking court jester clown, like Bingo. Making the hunting industry look like a bunch of redneck idiots. I'd rather be one day be a Jim Shockey, like respected, like, you know, speaking speaking for conservation, for the traditions of hunting, like putting out good stuff that quality brands in the long run are willing to tie their brand to you, because they know you may not have the same click ratio, but you're not a clown.
Bingo. No, I think that's, yeah, you're spot on. I think that's the route you're on, that path. Like, I've followed you for, you know, years now and watched all your stuff. It's always classy. It's always, you know, not chest pounding, but it looks good. It's raw. It's authentic, you know, and it's true to you. And I think, you know, that route, and that's where you want to, some of these freaking marketing directors, you want to slap, you know, like, what the frig are you trying to do? So you sponsor so-and-so for however many tens of thousands of dollars a year, just because she shoots your bow or runs your broadheads or runs your trail cameras, pretends that she runs just trail cameras. You know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean that people, like, do you think that more people are going to walk down the shelves at freaking Cabela's and go, oh, dude, I got to have a Bubba Block because she runs it?
Yeah, right.
I really don't think that's equating to sales.
No.
All you're doing is getting clicks, and it's letting you sit down in your meeting with your bosses and go, yeah, we got blah, 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 blah impressions. Well, is there any quality there?
90% were like dudes in Pakistan who were like looking for bikini photos or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I just, that really drives me nuts. And what really pisses me off is when you start going down it is those same people that we're talking about are competing for the same dollars that you and I are competing for.
Yeah.
You know, for sure. They're getting $40,000 a year that you and I can't get because they look better in a bikini than we do.
Right. And we're out here putting out amazing quality content.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I just got to say this, that really, I understand it, the ROI thing, but like, I hate the whole discount code thing, man. Like, I am not a freaking salesman. I'm not pushing 80 discount codes. I understand you want to see a return on your investment, but like, my job is to make killer content. Your job is to use that content to sell your product. I'm not selling it for you. I'm not a salesman. Anyway, I just had to say that.
No, that's good. I think
I hate that.
No, that, and there's a part of it too. What I can't stand is, and there's a real fine line in it. And again, this is one of those where I tiptoed this year. Is there are companies in a product category that are willing to pay money and take a chance on you and want to be a part of it, and then there are ones that are what you would like to run for gear, but they're not interested, or they're full, or they're whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For like, so I don't want to hear somebody talk about how this is the greatest broadhead, or these are the best knives in the world because of blah, 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 blah. Like, it's like, well, you're getting paid to say that. I have more respect out of the dude that's like, man, I'm not taking any money from these guys, but this is the best pack I've ever run. Initial Ascent is a perfect example. I know you're an Everly Stock dude, but like the Initial Ascent guys, dude, first of all, awesome people. And second of all, Dennis really happy with their pack. And it's like, I don't have a dollar. I bought my packs from them this year. And I wore them in every single hunt because it's the best pack that I personally have put on at this point in time, and it's worked the best for me. So I run it. Like, that to me carries more weight than if they were to be like, hey, Jameson, here's $20,000. Run this pack on every hunt you go on.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? There's that true factor, and that's really hard to differentiate when you start looking at across all these.
Yeah,
dude, Greg Ritz is like, he's one of the ones where I would imagine he would do it the least, and he does it the hardest. Like, he's out there with a freaking new knife and blah blah blah, and hey guys, I never could have done this. I'm like, it's not 90s marketing anymore. Like, what are you doing? And by the way, if so-and-so paid you $10,000 more to run it, you would say the same thing about that knife. So I immediately null and void anything you have to say.
Yeah. No, for sure.
Just and one example.
I've been really fortunate with my partners that, like, all of them, I legit love their products, use their products, would use them either way. I mean, there's always like, you know, sometimes, like you said, like a knife, like sometimes you make a decision based on what's good for your business because, like, yes, there are some knives that are better than other knives, but like, sometimes it's just like they'll cut an elk the same way. Like this one's offering to support you and your vision and your mission and your business. This one's not. Of course, you're going to use the one that supports you. So there's always an element of that. And, you know, there's always, you know, people don't like hearing about this part of the business, but, you know, we're trying to run businesses and support our families. Like, yeah, we get to do something awesome. And a lot of times it came from really hard work and taking risks. So sometimes we got to make business decisions, but yeah,
Bingo.
definitely don't want to be icky.
NASCAR about it.
Yeah, I mean, I love my Everly stock packs, but I know Initial Ascent is a great pack too. I know Stone Glacier is a great pack. But Everly stock is as good or better than anything I've ever used, and they're willing to come alongside me and support me and still have an awesome product with a great product line. I'm gonna go with those guys.
Yeah, that carries a lot of weight.
So anyway,
Hey, quick, that deer, I keep freaking looking at the splits over your shoulder there. Is that the deer that you killed in Oregon this year?
this one,
No, on the on your couch or
this
whatever.
one, this
Yeah,
was
what
my
is
first ever mature mule deer, from Montana. I don't know if you saw that episode or not, but it was just a general
Is it in the
Montana.
snow? Yeah, I saw that one. Okay.
Yeah, I
He
got.
it looked like giant forks. Dude, you killed a giant with Luke in what, Oregon, didn't you this
Yeah, I'll
year?
show you. He's right
That
here.
freaking film was awesome, man. That was a
The
stud.
loophole one?
Yeah.
Yeah, hold on one sec.
That was a stud.
Yeah, this is my biggest deer ever, and it's, I guess, you know, arguably one of the smaller subspecies, but he's
Yeah. That freaking thing is awesome.
141 inch gross, or yeah, gross. He made the Boone and Crockett by like an inch and a half.
Hell yes. That's awesome,
The
dude.
only Boone and Crockett deer I've ever killed. But yeah, that was super. That was awesome,
Nasty conditions too. Like
dude. That
just one
was
of those
yeah.
days where you're
Oh my
like,
gosh, dude, that shot was the hardest shot I've ever made too. It was like I was on a hill like this, and I just had my pack and I had my what are those called? Trekking poles, and I was like. And I don't know, I got a lot of heat on it because I had to shoot him a couple times. The first shot was good. It was maybe an inch or two back, but he was quartering hard.
Right.
Second shot
He would have
was,
laid down and died.
he would have, yeah.
You
Second
were
shot was money. Did you, I don't know if you could see it in the thing, but he goes, ugh, and he got hit like right here. Somehow he keeps walking, and then I put a third one in him. But if you look at closely when he, like right before I shoot him the final time, he's just standing there just pouring blood. I don't know if you can see it or not.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I watched, and that's again, that's one of those like you have to do stuff for you and what you feel good about, because you could have very easily cut that for the from a film standpoint and made that one shot
Dude,
very
actually,
easily.
yeah, and actually the guys at Loophole when we were producing that film, they were kind of like, can we clean this up kind of deal? Not like they're trying to hide anything, but and we actually, me and Luke actually went to bat to like leave it how it was, just because I thought that's the way it needed to be. And I mean, look, it was a tough shot, you know.
And you didn't
It
make a bad shot. It's not like you shot him freaking, you
yeah,
missed by
wasn't
a
like a,
foot and a half. It's not like you were unethical in anything. But
yeah.
it's again, you get those keyboard warriors that are like, but da 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 da.
Oh
That's why
yeah.
we should never be shooting or whatever. And it's like, look it, I'm giving you real, I'm giving you raw. If you've ever been out there in these conditions and you've shot enough animals, you're gonna have those scenarios. You're
Yeah.
gonna have the robot deer where you're like, I just ran two of them right through the freaking, I
Oh yeah.
mean, textbook shots, and you're not falling. I'm not sure what to do now.
I gotta tell you, dude, those blacktail are some of the toughest deer I've ever seen. That the next hunt we did with Luke, he drilled his twice and it was still like I thought it was gonna keep running away. Like they're extremely tough. I'm not kidding. They're some of the toughest deer I've ever seen. And yeah, like you said, man, it was real. It was raw. It was like literally the deer of a lifetime. I had just enough opening to shoot. It was kind of like on the outside, but just sort of in my bubble of where I thought I could pull the shot off. And he was with a doe. You know how they are when they're with does, man. Like, doesn't take anything. That doe just boogers off and you never see the deer again. I just felt in my gut, and me and Luke had a little bit of a, he kept saying like over and over, over my shoulder, dude, we can get over there. Dude, we can get over there. I was like, dude, I don't have confidence that we're going to be able to get over there and get on this deer. And I just, something in my gut was saying it's now or never. And so I went for it, you know?
Yeah. That gut thing. That's one of those things Austin said this year. He was like, dude, I have a lot of those debates, and you go through, and you've been on so many of these hunts, you know, like as behind a camera, like I've been on freaking, you know, 10 moose hunts. I've only hunted one moose myself, but it's like when something is in your gut saying I should do this, like so many times in the past, up to this past year, I would have thought about other scenarios and to convince myself not to do what I originally thought, because that was my knee jerk. And yeah. Austin was like, dude, if it's in your gut, he's like, just go with it. He's like, stop thinking, go with it, go with your gut. Anyways, he echoed that all fall, and I had hands down the best fall of my life. And it was just like, if it was thrown into your mind for a reason, there's some, you know, it's kind of like based on true story, there's something there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's the Holy Spirit, it's God.
Yeah, I mean, you're gonna have one opportunity at that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or you might have one opportunity, and it's like you have this one window that everything has lined out, and you need to capitalize right now. You know what I mean? Yep. And there's so many of those hunts. There's just so many hunts where you look back and you're like, that was my one window, and I did or did not capitalize on it. Had I not, I leave with a tag, and I have stories to tell about how next time I go back, I'm doing things different.
Yeah.
But if you see that one window and you capitalize on it, it's, you know, a lot of times that's what you got. So be ready to
roll. I
feel
like God gave us that gut instinct, like in a large part for hunting, like in, you know, the ancient times or whatever, like you follow that gut instinct sometimes, and that's what gets the animal on the ground. And so much in our, you know, normal lives is like designed to distract us and not hear that voice and not follow that voice. That's one of the things I love about hunting, is like, can get you back, you know, quiet things down, and learning to listen to that voice, and it usually pays off. And it wasn't where the gut instinct started. The gut instinct started when Luke was like, we're going to go all the way to the bottom of this thing and go back up that finger and try to shoot across. And we got about 3/4 of the way down, and I was like, no, we need to circle around the end of this thing and see if we can find an opening first. And my gut just said that. And so I said, no, we're doing that. And we went that way. We found just enough an opening, and that's where that started. And so anyway, that was cool. But are you okay on time? I was going to ask you about your fall real quick.
I'm good. I got nothing, dude.
Okay, cool. I usually keep it to an hour, but this has been really fun chatting with you. So yeah, I followed a little bit, but I'd like to hear a little bit about, so like, you had a pretty awesome, crazy fall. And then I want to hear about like what your like aspirations are going forward.
So this fall we did started off in the Brooks Range of Alaska. Flew up there on a DIY moose hunt. Just myself and Chip, and that was for a sight mark film. Optics company make real solid optics, and they don't get the love. It's it's a Vortex contender all day, and they just don't get love. And that's one of the projects we're working on is letting people know brand awareness overall. Anyways, I digress. We went up there, killed a moose. Had that opportunity with caribou. Had that, and I'm sitting there looking through the spotting scope. Freaking big bulls coming down through, and I'm like, it's 1.3 miles through some nasty brush. We could go kill that bull. I let Chip kind of talk me out of it. Like, dude, don't get overeager. You know what I mean? There's caribou tracks on the river below us. They'll come through. Never had a shot at a caribou. And I kicked myself in the ass because I'm like, I was lazy. I literally thought something would get easier. And I made a decision based off of something being easy. I'm like, and Alaska's the wrong place to be if that's your outlook.
Yeah, for sure.
Kill a big bull, 64 7/8, big ass, like
wow.
Awesome bull, super, super stoked. Killed him, came back home, spent some time with the family, killed an antelope with my wife and my two little kids. Nice. That was fun. And then I was like, all right, you know what? I've tried this two other times. This is like my third and final shot at this. I spend all this time filming everybody else, you know, and making them look like heroes in YouTube videos. And I very seldom do I put anything else out on YouTube just for myself. Mm-hmm. So I said, I'm going to kind of throw my eggs in one basket. I want a guy to follow me from like October 25th through November 25th. And I'm just going to go hunt. I drew a whole bunch of cool tags, like boom, 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 boom. Austin comes into the picture. He's like, I'll hang out all fall. Let's go, dude. I got a month. Let's do it. So we went, and it was just like, the right place, the right time, just everything opened itself up, and every decision that I made seemed to be like the right decision.
Nice,
It was an
dude.
absolute blessing.
You're flowing.
We went to South Dakota. My dad had a muzzleloader tagged. It's hard to draw. He killed like a 155 whitetail, like
Wow.
just freaking awesome. Textbook deer in a spot I'd been into before. Then I went and killed my. Oh, in Utah, I did a Benelli film there. Killed a 171 inch mule deer,
Ooh,
my
nice.
biggest mule he had ever killed. Super stoked. After my dad kills in South Dakota, I was like, all right, now I have a mule deer rifle tag. I pass up a bunch of good deer. My brother kind of got ticked at me. He's like, dude, you keep passing deer. I was like, I just want the deer that makes me happy. If I don't fill a tag, it's okay. We kind of spat a little bit and finally find a deer on like the third day that I liked and made a move. And that ended up being my biggest deer. So it was like a
Nice.
178 inch mule deer. Kill that one. The next day, I was like, all right, I got a whitetail tag. We go to another spot. And I was like, Austin, I'm just going to go in here. Like, there should be deer. Here's what they should be doing. There's a difference between should and will, and public land. This is all public land. And sure enough, a freaking drop tine, like 7.5-year-old
Ooh.
whitetail steps out with a freaking drop tine, big mass pushing does. I snuck in, shot him.
Wow.
Then I'm like, all right, this is freaking incredible. So we go to Nebraska. We go down there, and my wife shoots her first mule deer with my two kids, like literally, like sitting here with us. She shoots him at like 466 yards. She's a hell of a shot for not growing up shooting.
Yeah.
Smoked him like 160 some inch mule deer, first deer, awesome. Then I go in and kill 150 inch 10 point in this river bottom in Nebraska that I'd never seen before. Gnarly, twisted up tines. He comes in, shoot him, and then 2 days later, my mom goes into the same stand and she kills a 162 inch mainframe 8 point
Oh
that
my
I'd had on
goodness.
camera all fall. Killed that deer. And then where I had another film down there to shoot in Nebraska. So we go back and I had one more Nebraska tag, and I had this big deer that I was figuring would go about 170 whitetail. And I passed him because it's like I need to film somebody. I need to make one more film this fall. Contractually obligated to shoot one more film. So I take a buddy down there just a couple weeks ago, just before Christmas.
Yeah.
And on the last day, this freaking he ended up scoring 166. This big ass mainframe
Wow.
10 point comes out, jumps a fence like 50 minutes before dark. Like I got the Red Raptor set up with a
Dude, yeah,
600
you guys are
millimeter
shooting
long
like
lens,
legit cameras.
like full on set up at like 72 frames a second. And he just thumps this thing. And it was one of those, like, it was just an incredible fall. But a lot of this content, like you asked, like on Instagram, like I don't have a place for it to live. I have like YouTube, but not much of a following. But I finally said, you know what? Like, let me just put some of this content out there because it's what I do, and it's from a quality standpoint, it's average or better than a lot of the stuff that's out there living. Kind of one of those like why not me moments,
Yeah.
So, and it worked out. Austin got a ton of good footage, a ton of great, content for the few partners that actually said, yeah, let's be a part of this. And
That's
yeah, so
awesome, dude.
now that's
That's a
I'm gonna
lot
just
squeezed into a month.
dude, it's freaking crazy. So busy. And just all good, big, mature deer. And the cool thing is I've got all their teeth and I've sent all those in,
Cool.
is to get some actual intel on, so
Yeah.
many times you look at a deer and you're like, ah, it's 3.5-year-old. And it's like, yeah, but do we really know? Like
Yeah.
you can, make your guesstimates. But so I've got these teeth sent in to really get some science behind,
That's
what you're
cool.
killing, and interested to hear feedback on those.
Dude, one day I want to do a whole deer slam in 1 year.
That'd be sweet. Now, when
That
you
would
say
be
deer
fun.
slam, how minute are you breaking it down?
I'm just doing the five Boone and
Okay.
Crockett species. So Sitka blacktail, Columbia blacktail, mule deer, whitetail, coos deer.
That'd be sweet.
Yeah.
Have you killed a coos deer?
Yeah, I this my Oregon blacktail was my last f for the slam.
Sweet.
So I have one coos deer. I want to do that again. I want to get a bigger one.
Was that fun hunt?
It was. This is a tough hunt, but it
Did you
was
do it in
fun.
Mexico or just in Arizona?
I did it in Mexico. I'm building points in Arizona, but I think that hunt's in like October or something, and like I just have other stuff. That's a really cool option for January. It's pretty logistic heavy. And I found a connect for a it's private land, but it's DIY in Texas, like desert mule deer hunt I'm gonna do next year.
Sweet.
Like first half of December. Because I was gonna do Mexico again, but I decided to do this just because it's just logistically so much easier. But it is really cool hunting coos deer in the rut with a rifle, I gotta say. It is cool.
I filmed it in Mexico. Great place. Killed like a 115, bit killed a,
That
big
is
Boone and
big.
Crockett.
Yeah.
Really cool, super freaking technical glassing. Like, holy
Oh,
smokes, those
dude.
things can hide. Like,
Oof, yeah.
I'm not joking. We rolled into a spot at sunrise. We sat down. There's snow on the ground, so you'd think it'd be easy to see him. Like, it still was hard. The
Oh,
dude
yeah.
pulls out BTXs, and then he sets a pair of binos on a tripod, hands me a tripod and a spotting scope. I got my binos, and then the hunter was sitting here, and we just glassed for freaking like 4 days straight.
Yeah.
All day, you start a fire, go over there, warm up, come back over and glass, and you just glass. And the number of like, he was one of the best glassers, I guess, if that's a freaking thing.
Yeah.
Like, just a beast behind the glass. Like, he'd
Yeah.
pick out a freaking in-ear flicker. You know what I
Yep.
mean? Like, through a juniper tree, and like, 500 yards away, you'd see a do-do-do, and it's like, oh damn. And then you start breaking it down, and then you see a nose, and then you see a deer had his leg folded, stretch his leg out, and you
Yeah.
start breaking it down. Like, there's 12 deer over there on that side hill, and we've been looking here for 3 hours and didn't see a thing. Like, it's
Yeah,
incredible.
they're next level, and then it's just a matter of okay, you see them, and then they disappear in 5 seconds, or they're in so thick stuff you don't get a shot. So like, it was kind of like a blessing. Even the one I killed is like not even that. He's like a, a decent buck. He's not like a huge buck, but like, I saw this. I was hunting with Brad Hunt from Gritty, and I spotted like a, like I'm not kidding, like a 135, 140 inch
Ooh.
coos deer. Yeah, it's on. I have it on film. He disappeared, and then this like I don't know. He's probably like a 85, 90 or something. Came out and just like he's right there.
Oh yeah. Cool mass on that side.
He just like came out at like 300 yards and just bedded down like in plain sight. Like the first time anything like that had ever happened. So I was like, you know what? Like this is right. I'm shooting this deer, and did. And so, yeah, I'd like to do it again. It was a tough hunt. It's just so logistic heavy, but I don't know, maybe we can do that one together someday or
Hell
something.
yeah. Yeah, I'm in, dude. I've never done Columbia blacktail. I love sicked blacktails.
I do too. And
That
I would need
freaking,
to do that
oh,
again. I
so
need to
much
do that
fun.
again.
I just finally booked, we're going back in October to Kodiak Island,
Okay.
and I got a transporter up there I've been going with, and you go out, and it's like the second whaling my little boy's old enough to follow along behind me, like, that is the hunt I'm taking him on. It's
Yep.
game rich. You can shoot ducks, you can freaking fish, you can, like, it is just such a fun. Oh, there you go.
That was my first ever Western big game animal and first ever film I did was this hunt. And right after I shot this one, my buddy shot a 107 inch right next
Holy
to him.
smokes.
Well, he actually shot first, but
That's a big blacktail, man.
yeah. But anyway, last question, then I'll let you go, man. But what do you got? Like, what are you looking to in the future? You're gonna keep doing your thing? You're gonna start branching out more and doing more of your own thing? What are you thinking?
Well, yeah, got some stuff in the works. Like I said, I can't get too much into details. I
Okay.
have something in the works that you'll be aware of come fall. That is really kind of something I've always thought about, and kind of goes back to that gut feeling thing. It's something I've always thought about, something I've always thought, boy, it'd be cool to do, and have never pursued because there's a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of money, a lot of everything behind it to actually pull it off at the level that I want. I
Sounds
had
cool.
some meetings, and kind of got some responses from some people that I'm doing work for that really kind of pushed my hand. And I was like, you know what? Okay, watch this. It was kind of that, like, that gut instinct, like, all right, divine intervention. Somebody's telling me here to just go gamble on yourself. So anyways, I am putting everything I have into that right now. Continue to do the side films, like, not side films, the films, like, I'm doing a really cool piece in April for Pulsar Wolves in Northwest
Nice.
Territories.
Sweet.
Stuff like that. Like, how do you not go enjoy that story?
Yeah.
Badass location, hunting an awesome animal. So, like, that will always be a part of it. And I don't know if I could ever, like, retire and get away and say, I'm not going to go shoot any films this year. Like, I might not go shoot seven of them, And I'm not going to go sit in a tree stand for 20 days filming somebody try to kill a deer, but I want to go tell good stories. But I really want, I'm really gambling on myself with this one project. And I want to, you know, kind of, I want to change the game in this product category. And I want to elevate other companies. I want other companies to go, damn, we need, if we're going to play, we need to step up our shit, you know, and not just settle for mediocrity. Like we need to elevate ourselves or else we're just going to, you know, fall by the wayside. So,
well, I'm intrigued. I can't wait to hear more about it.
Yeah. Man. I'm excited to share more. So that's what I've got. And, last question I was going to ask you though, this fall, what do you get? You got anything crazy lined out from a hunt schedule?
So I, my plan is just starting to come together and this is what I'm hoping will happen. I still got to get clearance from, you know, the wife and stuff, but basically I'm hoping I'm going to go, I'm doing a fly-in hunt. I finally got in with a good air transporter for a fly-in caribou hunt. Probably the last time I hunt caribou for a while. I've been kind of on a caribou kick lately, but finally got in with a good air transporter. So I'm going to do that with Casey from Eberly Stock and Luke right now, hopefully if he's healed up in time. End of September or end of August into early September. I'm going to do
Alaska, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Alaska, yeah.
Awesome.
And then I'm going to do a Utah general muzzleloader deer hunt late September into the first couple days of October. Beautiful. Really looking forward. That'll be like another like mono imano me versus the mule deer type situation. And it's open sight muzzleloader, so it'd be a little more of a challenge.
Yeah.
Should be cool. And then I have a really cool, it's not like 100% lockdown, but I'm like, we already started planning it. So like it's 99%, but I'm working on a cool collaboration episode with Ducks Unlimited. They want to get more into the big game space. So I put together a hunt where me and one of their representatives, we're going to go shoot ducks in the morning and then shoot antelope during the day and then maybe go shoot more ducks at night. So it's like a waterfowl antelope combo Wyoming hunt.
Very nice.
With Ducks Unlimited. And then I might go back to Oregon, hunt blacktails again with my buddies out there, Josh and maybe Luke again. And then I got this, I found, which is extremely hard to find actually, DIY desert mule deer, like anywhere in the world. Like it's almost impossible to find unless you just know people.
Right.
I found a guy who has about a 1500 acre ranch that he's basically just going to let me just go for it for a week.
That'd be awesome.
In December. So, in the middle of nowhere in the desert in Texas. So,
some big deer down there.
You know,
like, what do you hunt? Like 150 mealies? Like, what are you looking
at? Yeah. I mean, I don't, it's like one of those situations where it's like, it's not like a trophy. If it's managed for like trophy mule deer, you're going to have a guide babysitting you. Like,
yeah,
just because they can make tens of twenties of thousands of dollars off it. So it's not like that kind of deal. It's probably like, you know, there's some like decent mature bucks, like nothing crazy, but I'm not looking for like, oh, I got to get a 180 or whatever. Like I want to go out there, glass some desert mule deer, have fun, have an adventure and like have a shot at a decent mature buck and I'll be happy. And he said, that's totally like doable. And they have Audad there too. If like the deer ain't happening or something, probably.
Heck yeah.
So anyway, that's kind of what I got. And then, but I still got, I'm going to New Zealand in April to hunt with Joe Edlington. Have you seen his channel, J.E. Wilds?
No.
He's got a real big hunting and fishing channel. Just check him out. But yeah, so.
That'd
and then
cool.
I'm doing this Audad hunt in a couple weeks here, and then I'll be doing this, some of the shows. But
that'd be awesome. New Zealand's on my bucket list, man. That's like, I want to go over there and trout fish. Like I want to go over there and do some of the mountain hunts, but like I want to throw dry flies for big nasty browns and just that crystal clear water. It's like, oh man, that's a bucket list.
You should check out my buddy's channel. He's got a hunting channel, but he's also got a fishing channel. And like his fishing channel, they'll do these like sick, like they'll like go into these like uninhabited islands and like hike over the top and then like catch huge kingfish from the shore. And like, just like, I don't even like fishing that much, but it's like, I would do that. It looks sick.
Yeah. I'll have to check it out.
Anyway,
awesome. Dude. Well, yeah, I'm glad we got to connect, to you, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's stay in touch. Hopefully one day maybe we can collaborate or do some work together or something. Yeah. That'd be cool.
I like it.
All right,
I appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, good talking to you, dude.
Good luck this fall. Be safe.
Yeah.
See you,
thanks, man.
Later.
You too.